Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a new pre-publication review policy issued by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence that bars officials in all 17 intelligence agencies from speaking without permission to journalists about unclassified information related to intelligence at the risk of civil penalties and the loss of security clearances and access. Scott Horton, a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security, joins us to discuss renewed efforts to censor even unclassified government information and cut off access to the press, as well as Scott Horton's latest article at Harper's that blows holes in the government's claims about the deaths of three prisoners at Guantanamo, the Guantanamo suicides, in quote, a Camp Delta sergeant blows the whistle. Then we'll examine the likely foreign policy impact of a new and more assertive nationalist leader in India, Narendra Modi, and speak with Ashley Tellis, who served as a senior advisor to the ambassador at the United States Embassy in New Delhi and on the National Security Council staff as special assistant to the president and senior director for strategic planning and Southwest Asia. We will discuss the strategic implications towards China of Modi's close personal ties to Japan's nationalist leader Shinzo Abe and the complications of a more assertive policy towards Pakistan. Then finally, we will get a more personal analysis of the man who is India's new prime minister and examine Modi's Hindu fundamentalist roots and the legal implications of his cover-up of a previous marriage with a child of his. Dr. Abusalah Sharif, the executive director and chief scholar at the U.S.-India Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., who is engaged in policy research that impacts both the U.S. and the Indian governments, joins us to discuss a leader who may be more cynical than pious, who uses religion as a divisive political tool without taking responsibility for the sectarian violence that often ensues religious incitement. And joining us now is Scott Horton, who's a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security. He served as counsel to Andrei Sakharov and Elena Bonner, among other activists in the former Soviet Union, and serves on the American branch of the International Law Association and has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. And his latest article at Harper's is The Guantanamo Suicides, in quote, a Camp Delta sergeant blows the whistle. Welcome to Background Briefing, Scott Horton.
Ian, great to be with you.
And what's happening now with the intelligence community, particularly the General Clapper, the head of the Office of, he's the Director of National Intelligence, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence has just issued these new guidelines for intelligence personnel in terms of how they deal with journalists. And this covers current and former employees and contractors of all the 17 intelligence agencies that may not cite news reports based on leaks in their speeches, opinion articles, books, term papers, or other unofficial writings. This seems like an extraordinary form of censorship, particularly when it relates to unclassified information.
Well, that's exactly right. I like to refer to this as the Clapper Fatwa, because that's what it is. It's a declaration of war on whistleblowers, but also a declaration of war on democracy and democratic institutions. And I think the pushback we hear from the agency right now is, well, this is really nothing new. All these rules have always been there before. But here they're being codified and presented in a far more aggressive posture than we've ever seen them before. And I think by way of background, we have to start by reminding ourselves that that General Clapper is the man who came before Congress and lied point blank about the nature of NSA proceedings. And his lies were revealed, and he was horribly embarrassed as a result of a whistleblower action, largely the Snowden disclosures, which made completely clear that he was making false statements. And so that was intensely embarrassing to him. And indeed, I think, no less than George Shultz, former Secretary of State, said said recently he didn't understand how Clapper was still serving in the government after that, because certainly it is a very, very serious crime to lie to Congress, which is what he did, but he hasn't been prosecuted. Instead, he's trying to turn his guns very aggressively on the people who embarrassed him.
But this is serious, though, for people inside the government who can't even comment on unclassified news reports, because failure to comply with Clapper's instructions will result in the imposition of civil and administrative penalties and may result in the loss of security clearances and access. And if you're in the intelligence business and you lose your security clearance, you're as good as dead.
That's exactly right. And the penalties would also include forfeiture of benefits and pension rights and everything else. So it's quite severe. And I think here, you just look at it practically. Let's say you are you're an intelligence officer. You went to college with someone who went on to be a writer or editor for a publication somewhere. You can't go have lunch with your college friend without getting pre-clearance from the intelligence service. Now, that's what they're saying. So they're imposing an incredible chill on all dealings with journalists, and the definition of journalists is also extremely expansive. And this would also apply even to people who are no longer actively in government employ. Let's say someone who retired and has now become a college professor or a writer or a movie consultant. With respect to things within their knowledge from the time of their service, they would be subject to the same sorts of restrictions.
Well, but people like you and me, Scott, are pretty much put out of business, aren't we? I mean, isn't that aren't we the collateral damage, or perhaps the intention of this new rule that journalists who are interested in national security affairs, I'm interested in, because I think that's where you learn the most, right? The secrets.
That's exactly right. I think this, if we look back over the last 3 or 4 years to this really aggressive clampdown on whistleblowers, the targets consistently have been reporters and writers on national security issues. So the government goes through, checks pen numbers, and they're eager to see when has someone with access to classified information spoken to a journalist or writer. That's what they're after. And this is just ratcheting up the pressure to another level. And this is at a time when we've got more than 1 million people in the United States who are subject potentially to these restrictions. And we have more and more vital information relating to the waging of wars overseas and diplomatic matters is classified. We have more classified information than ever before, and it is increasingly difficult for the public to learn about what its government is doing. So there are all sorts of things which routinely would have been the subject of reports by the press and the media in the past, which the government is increasingly putting out of the reach of the public. So this is part of an effort to ensure that the voters in a democratic society do not know what their government is doing.
Again, I'm speaking with Scott Horton, who's a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security. He served as counsel to Andrei Sakharov and Elena Bonner, among other activists in the former Soviet Union, and serves on the American branch of the International Law Association, and has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers, and has a new article at Harper's, "The Guantanamo Suicides," in quote, "A Camp Delta Sergeant Blows the Whistle." So, is there an explanation for this in kind of personal terms, Scott, that Clapper, who you pointed out lied under oath to the Congress and to the American people about PRISM and the early information that Snowden put out, or actually was embarrassed by the early information that Snowden put out? My understanding is that the Snowden damage to national security is incredible. I mean, they're all reeling from it. They don't know exactly how much he's gotten, but they basically figure that that he's essentially been working for the Russians all along, at getting being able to cherry pick all this important information and get it out in a way that makes it look like he's a he's a hero because people like Glenn Greenwald and others are essentially perhaps unwitting covers for his what they call an exfiltration to Russia, where they finally called him back with this amazing treasure trove. And already you've got people like Secretary of State Kerry saying privately that he was completely blindsided by Putin's grab of Crimea because the Russians went dark. There was no intelligence of what they were up to, which they attributed to the Snowden leaks. So if the reports that I'm hearing from the intelligence community that Snowden is responsible for the greatest blow to American intelligence in history, maybe there's a hyperbole there. They always exaggerate. But on the other hand, is that mean that everybody else is being a scapegoat, that they're all kind of flaying around in anger and, you know, beating up on the wrong people?
Yes, it means they're beating up on the wrong people. I would say, first of all, there is no participant in this public discussion as guilty of hyperbole as the intelligence services. They scream bloody murder and say that the sky is falling in every time there's a significant leak. Remember when the Bradley Manning leaks occurred, we were told that American uniformed personnel would die as a result of this, that there would be horrible damage to U.S. diplomacy around the world. I spent some time with the BBC reviewing these claims, and we were very hard-pressed to find any credible evidence of damage. We found a lot of evidence of positive things coming out of it for the United States. But I think with the Snowden disclosures, there's no doubt that disclosures of means and methods of signals intelligence gathering has been harmful to the United States. But I'd say most of the harm has come in embarrassment concerning policy decisions and policy choices the government has made that it is not able to publicly justify. So the U.S. lied to the American people, lied to its allies about what it was doing. And when these things were disclosed, the U.S. really wasn't in a position to plausibly justify what it was doing. So I'd say those are the big things. Now, that's harmful, but that's not a bad kind of harm. That's the sort of dialogue we should have in a democratic society. Vis-a-vis what's happened with Russia and being blindsided by Putin and so on, I would really doubt that Snowden's disclosures really harmed that. That issue. In fact, I think our satellite intelligence of what Putin has been doing and what he's been up to and our signals intercepts, all that's fine. And I think we're in a good position there. I think the U.S. has made a decision that it's not going to involve itself militarily in Crimea, which is or in eastern Ukraine, which is the reason that that's going on. But I think these issues, I think the main questions really have to do with to what extent we're going to have an educated public about critical questions of national security, and particularly about questions that relate directly to going to war or making peace.
Well, but if any of these claims by the intelligence community about the damage that Snowden is alleged to have done, if any of them are true, it's all on them. It's about the fact that they hire people to screen people's background clearances through these private contractors who pay minimum wage workers, that they weren't watching the store. This is not the fault of journalists or people like you and me. It's their problem.
That's exactly right. I mean, in fact, I'd say we have that issue both with Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden. That is, you know, we have these two mega leaks that have occurred in massive quantity. And the big question people should be asking right up front is why Bradley Manning and why Edward Snowden had access to all of this information. We really haven't gotten plausible explanations out of the NSA or previously from the military of why that was so. I mean, it's obviously gross errors. I think it's to say that it's the media that's responsible for that or journalists doing their job is not really a responsible criticism.
So let's turn to your most recent article. It's at Harper's Now, Scott Horton, the Guantanamo suicides and, quote, a Camp Delta sergeant blows the whistle. I take it that you're blowing a hole here, your article's blowing a hole in the government's claim about the death of three prisoners at Guantanamo. I think it was, back in 2006?
Yeah, it was in June 9, 2006 that this originally occurred, and I published an article about this about 3 years ago, which reviewed all the government's claims and pointed to all the problems with it. Now we've discovered a set of about 12 documents, one of which we published in Harper's yesterday, that are from the government's own internal investigation, which they had suppressed originally, and we have now pulled out. And these documents, again, show that the government's claims that these three people committed suicide in their cell are almost certainly not true. And instead, it appears that these three prisoners have been extracted from their cells that evening and taken to a facility which the perimeter guards called Camp No. We now know through work of the Associated Press that this facility was referred to by the CIA as Penny Lane. And we also know at that time that it was an active site that was used in connection with the PSYOPs operation to try and turn prisoners. So this is when the Bush administration was starting to release people from Guantanamo. And as is usual in such circumstances, the intelligence service was trying to win some of them over and turn them into intelligence assets. I think the U.S. has had a real problem all along with al-Qaeda in terms of not having really very good human intelligence within the organization. So this was an effort to plant people inside who could give reports. And these three people were clearly caught up in that program, and they were subjected to something that resulted in their death that evening. And the government, rather than come clean and explain everything that was going on, has created this fable, basically, about them committing suicides in their cells as a cover story.
Well, but what happened to those people? The weird reports of orange blood. I mean, what was going on? Do you know?
Yeah, I mean, of course, we still don't have details. What we know is that all three of them had a piece of cloth, like an athletic sock, stuffed down their throats. And there was a study done by the University of California at Davis looking at this pattern. And it was found to be similar to something that was going on around the same time at the naval brig in Charleston, a procedure that was called dry boarding. So it was a procedure designed to induce a sensation of asphyxiation. So in essence, almost exactly the same thing as waterboarding, but without the water. And in the, I guess, the most plausible scenario, well, we know, first of all, these three people all died as a result of having this cloth stuffed down their throats. So there was probably a misadministration of this technique, and it resulted in death. So I think it's rather unlikely that these were intentional homicides, but it does seem to be directly connected to this intelligence service program.
Well, Scott Horton, your article is available there at Harper's for all to see, a Guantanamo suicide in quote, a Camp Delta sergeant blows a whistle. And I thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be with you, Ian. Good luck.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Scott Horton, who's a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security. He served as counsel to Andrei Sakharov and Elena Bonner, among other activists in the former Soviet Union, and serves on the American branch of the International Law Association and has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back looking into a more assertive foreign policy from India's new nationalist leader.